to when they retire from college. As it turns out, just about anything they want. The pressure to score the perfect gig by graduation is intense, and many students are stressed about what's next. So we set out to discover stories of the unlikely paths people took on their way to success. What did they do with their majors? How did they overcome setbacks? And what would they tell their college selves if they could? The ladder of success is not always up. At times, it's sideways or even down, but it always leads to where you're supposed to be. And the most successful people in life were once confused college students trying to figure out where they fit. We're all on our own journeys of career discernment, and regardless of how you might feel now, at the end of the day, you're probably okay.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to this week's episode. I'm so excited to host my guest today, Mr. Rudy Reyes. Rudy has been a personal friend and mentor of mine since I first came to Notre Dame back in 2009. He's been an incredible guide and source of advice and inspiration to me in my own career discernment journey. And I think what makes Rudy so special are his unique lived experiences, his curious mind, and his pursuit of lifelong learning. You know, he's one of the smartest people I know, for sure, and I know a lot of people. He is a fierce friend and someone who cares deeply about the people of Notre Dame, especially its students. So, Rudy, welcome and thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. You know, Rudy, I often quote you actually when I speak with people about Notre Dame, especially its students, when you say, "Notre Dame students don't just come here for the education, but more importantly, for the formation." This is a place where students are challenged to think beyond themselves and beyond the classroom and think deeply about the impact they'll have on the world. And I think under this lens of career discernment, you often tell students to start with the end in mind. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
Sure. No, I think Notre Dame is definitely one of those places where an individual comes here really with a set of questions and an intention to explore and really, frankly, to be curious. But at the same time, especially as tough as the application process is in these days, you have some kind of a vision for what you want your life to look like. I often ask my students to think about how would you want your eulogy to begin? At the end of your life, as you're looking back, as your friends are looking back, is it that you had the most successful run of a business, the highest title that you've achieved, the rank in the military, whatever the case might be, or is it that you had an impact on someone or some place, that you did something that mattered, that you had, as Father Soren might have said, you had a force for good? That's what we invite students to really explore at a place like Notre Dame. And I think, I hope, it's unique in the landscape as a result. I wish I could take credit for this idea of the end in mind, but it's not mine. As you know, I studied medieval theology and philosophy, and this was really part of how we have come to understand the work of Thomas Aquinas. Thomas always understood his work as beginning with the end in mind, certainly the beatific vision, etc., but really it was about the arc of humanity's return to God, and that our entire life, our entire journey of faith, as pilgrims, as he would say, is to return to God. But we can't do so empty-handed. As the old Irish tale goes, when you get to heaven, St. Peter will say, "Sure, welcome, show us your scars." And if you get there and say, "I don't have any scars," St. Peter might ask you, "Was nothing worth fighting for?" So in a true Notre Dame way, we're asking you to think about what's important to you, what's worth fighting for, and how will your life, your career journey, help you answer that question at the end.
I love that message, and I know you talk to even a Moreau class you teach. I had the opportunity to sit in on one a couple weeks ago. I remember you telling the great story about Father Hesburgh, and I think you tell it in a really funny way of like, do you think he set out to do what he did? And just kind of talking about that natural, you know what I mean? Just kind of how he went from start to finish is quite interesting.
Yeah, it is, you know, as with all things Father Hesburgh, everything's true and some of it really happened, somewhat like the Bible as well. But he, you know, when you got to know him and you got to hear his stories, you sometimes forget that he was really a very young man when he came here from New York, and he came here to study, really. And then even when he began his journey to the priesthood and in the priesthood, his ambitions were really about military chaplaincy, being a good priest. And I don't gather that he set out to become president of Notre Dame. And in fact, I think you have to be somewhat crazy if you set out with that kind of an ambition. I often joke, people look up at Father Jenkins' box in the stadium his football seats, and they say, "Wow, those are awesome. I'd love to be president of Notre Dame." And I said, "I wouldn't. I want to be friends with the president of Notre Dame, but no way. It's not worth it."
It's like the you don't necessarily want a boat. You want a friend with a boat.
You want a friend with a boat. That's right. And I think, you know, when you think about the presidency of a place like Notre Dame, I don't think anyone would set their sights on it necessarily. But Father Hesburgh, I think, always towards the end of his life, he says, we have to do all that we can, as well as we can, for as long as we can. And I think that was sort of the way he looked at everything he did, and not just the 35 years he was president of Notre Dame. And I think that's a good message for us, isn't it? That sometimes in life we're called to do certain things. Sometimes we're good at it. Sometimes it makes us happy. That's a distinction we can talk about, certainly. But we have to do all that we can, as well as we can, for as long as we can.
Mm-hmm. That's a really great point. And I'm curious, you've mentioned a few times about, like, you have a background with theology and you've studied medieval times. And I'm kind of wondering if that perspective has changed the way that you look about these questions that we're asking you about career discernment and talking to students. Like, how does your unique background kind of impact the advice that you would give to students?
Well, I used to say that I've learned a lot of things in my short but colorful life. And it's not as short as it was when I started saying that, but it's still colorful. I did. I came to Notre Dame as a student, and I studied medieval theology and philosophy and history. But at a certain point, I grew tired, as it were, and an adventure presented itself, and I took it. And I went into a startup called Better World Books. It was actually founded by three Notre Dame alumni. It's a much longer story of how that company grew. But it was an interesting one to me, and I was invited to join them. But I will say that my background in arts and letters and the humanities really provided me a solid foundation for business, which always takes everybody aback a bit. You know, how is that possible? What do you mean by that? You know, we don't often see PLS majors in boardrooms, or do we? And that's an important question, too, because we do. My first board meeting, I always tell this to my students because the finance majors freak out, that my first board meeting, they threw up the balance sheet and I had to raise my hand and gently ask, "What is EBITDA?" I had never seen these letters together except in the eye doctor's office. Everyone in the room sort of turned around and looked and said, "What in the world have we gotten ourselves into with this guy?" So I left that meeting determined to come back and be somewhat knowledgeable and not embarrass myself again. So I got a couple of books on finance and accounting and as management, read them, came back the next month and had something to say. And I think, if anything, that's somewhat how my entire life has been. I know a little bit about everything, enough to be dangerous, perhaps. It's about knowing enough to ask questions. It's about knowing enough to know what you don't know so that you can be sort of, well, for lack of a better word, curious. It's in those moments when you ask someone about what it is they're working on or what is it that they see as another opportunity. That's where we find our next move. And so, to some degree, yes, my background in scholastic theology is another name for at least the period of the Middle Ages that I studied. This was a very important aspect of that scholarly pursuit, was asking questions. Because remember, they didn't have Thomas Aquinas to read. It was being written. They didn't understand necessarily or have the same worldview that we do, where we can, you know, go to Mr. Wikipedia and get anything we want within seconds. It was a matter of writing letters and asking questions and, frankly, spending a lot of time thinking, something I think we don't do a whole lot of today that is a really important part of career discernment, really thinking and discerning and looking at the world and saying, hey, what's out there that may not have an answer right now? What is it that I might be able to do that would bring me some joy and actually make a difference in the world? So yes, very long answer. I think my background as a seeker of knowledge, as a student of history and theology and philosophy, has made a big difference in the way that I approach this idea of career path, career discernment.
I think also you're in a really unique position of being a student, but also having a really vast Notre Dame alumni network through your work, but also just through your personal connections. And one thing that, you know, Olivia and I talk a lot about is the advantages and opportunities that students have to network with those alums now, not just when they're also alums. So when you talk about curiosity, conversations, asking great questions, you talk a little bit about the openness of the Notre Dame alumni to have conversations with students and what the opportunity truly is for students right now to reach out to folks.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, I think we have networking has become such a dirty word in a lot of ways. It feels you almost feel like you need a shower after you go to a networking session. But frankly, when done right, a networking session or the activity of networking can really be enlightening beyond the sort of connection. And what do I mean by that? So for one thing, I say that everyone is worth meeting and some people are worth hanging out with. And I think that that's true for networking. You don't need to go into one of these things and say every time you reach out to someone or every event you go to, you have to build some kind of lifelong friendship. That's not what this is about. Rather, this is about, frankly, exploring and identifying those things which are interesting to you. When I think about the idea of networking, I'm looking for people who have either done something that I think I might like to do, or to help me verify, I often reach out to people who do the very thing that I think I would never want to do. And I ask them about it. And they tell me their work. So, for example, I myself could never have ever imagined myself working in a startup with a sort of sales and marketing function. And yet that's exactly where I found myself. The reason I was able to sort of approach that with confidence was that over the previous years of my then short but colorful life, I was able to meet people who had been in that position, and they helped me to understand that it wasn't what I assumed it was. And that's the problem, is we sort of look at these roles and we have the Hollywood motion picture version of a day trader or a lawyer or a sales executive or whatever the case might be. And yet the reality is so vastly different, and there's so much more to it that perhaps there is some element of us that we can bring to it that might certainly be very good at it, but might enhance the role itself and in so doing somehow make us better as individuals. So, yeah, I think networking is one of those things where it can be a really wonderful experience if you approach it really as with most things in life, with very little expectation that burdens the activity, frankly. I think to a large degree, much of our life is one prolonged networking event. If you truly approach every individual you meet as an opportunity to learn, to make yourself better, and in some ways to offer them something of yourself, you know, it's that kind of reciprocity that can really make networking into a fun and really beneficial activity. But that's all of life, isn't it? Think about those friends in your own path that all they do is take. We don't like hanging out with those people, and you certainly don't want to be one of those people. So when you think about networking as more of a, how can we help each other, both to learn and to be more productive, takes on a whole different meaning. And I dare say, without getting a little too far, it could be actually a very sacred activity.
That is a really great way to look at it. I really like that. And I'm wondering, Rudy, you've mentioned like some of the right questions to be asking maybe other people, but what would you give students advice about? Like, what questions should we be asking ourselves? I think it's really easy to ask those very high level questions of what do I want in life? But those also can be very intimidating questions because they are so high level. So do you have any advice about maybe how we can drill in on some more specific, more meaningful and therefore like more practical and useful questions?
Well, I think the most important question to ask yourself as a younger student is, frankly, what makes me happy? You know, when you wake up in the morning and you think about the day ahead of you, what gets you out of bed? Is it the Orgo problem set that still needs to be finished? Perhaps because you're in a panic, of course, but no, seriously, does it excite you to the degree that you want to jump out of bed and you want to tackle that problem? You know, is it your philosophy seminar where you're struggling with some of the most important normative questions in life? Is it your music theory class, the creation of that beauty, perhaps in your art and sculpture class? These are the things that you sort of, what makes me happy? What gives you energy? I often tell students, you will spend your life doing things you're good at. The real important question is to ask what really makes you happy. that's where you'll find your true career lies. The other thing I think that's really important as it relates to career is to distinguish and ask yourself the hard question, the difference between things I want and things I need. You know, what do I really need in my life? Do I need a seven-figure salary with bonus, you know, by year 10 of my career? Or can I get by and be very, very happy with something a little less? Do I really need the latest model car? Or do I just need something that gets me from point A to point B because I'd rather invest that in family or travel or something else? These are important questions that relate to career, but they also have great impact on your life and your future quality of life. One other thing that I would always encourage students to be asking themselves is, how can I make the world a better place? What is it in my gifts and talents, my toolbox, that I can give to the world, that I can give to my fellow man in a way that is enhancing or making life better for the rest of the world? You know, when the Keough School for Global Affairs here at Notre Dame launched, it was a lot of rumbling about, what are we really going to be doing with this school? Will we ever be able to compete with the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown, for example? And the then future dean, Scott Appleby, Professor Scott Appleby, said, no, you got this all wrong. This is a school that is going to be focused on lifting people out of poverty, whether that be in policy or foreign service. Our focus is really understanding the problems and working on solutions that will lift people out of poverty. And it just struck me, isn't that really all of our calling? Isn't that what we ask our Notre Dame students to do? Our law school, a different kind of lawyer, our business school, ask more of business. But don't we do that sort of across the campus? I often say you could go to any one of the top 20 institutions and get a phenomenal education. But you come here for the formation, as Jared quoted me of saying in the beginning. And that formation will force you to ask yourself, what have I done lately that has made life better for those around me? So hopefully those are a few things to think about.
Thank you so much. That is such a good mindset to have. And I think that actually serves as a good segue, maybe a little bit between Jared and I were talking about this distinction that you make between general career discernment and then authentic career discernment. And I think you're touching on that a little bit already, but could you just describe in a little bit more detail exactly what you look at authentic career discernment as meaning?
Sure. You know, again, I think as with all things in life, I have borrowed so many bits and pieces and also reflected on my own experience. But one of the things that always stuck with me was the words of a vocation director that I had when I was a very, very young man, who often said, true discernment cannot and does not happen in isolation. What did he mean by that? So he always encouraged us to have people around us that would really not only tell us the truth, but frankly call us out. And there comes a point when in each of our lives, let's pick on accountants for a minute. We might be going down a path and we've charted all of this out and we're beginning to realize that as an accounting student, I hate math. And I don't like rules. Well, that doesn't sound like the makings of a very happy, lifelong accountant. And yet we might continue going down that path because, well, my father's an accountant. And my grandfather's an accountant. And my mother and dad only paid for me to come to Notre Dame because I'm going to get an accounting degree. And oh, by the way, I can go home and join the family business when I'm done. So if I can just make it through these next 5 years, because now you have to have all that extra credit hours to sit the exam, I'll be fine. In that situation, maybe it's actually the friend that we have around us that will see me and say, Rudy, you hate numbers and you don't like rules. You're going to be miserable for the rest of your life as an accountant. See, that's the kind of honesty that we need in the discernment process for someone to see that in us and be honest enough to call it out. But at the same time, we also need people that says, Rudy, you're not going to be a great accountant, but when you play the piano, you light up. This is where your heart is at. Because sometimes we can't see it. Perhaps I think about playing the piano as simply a way to relieve a little stress or kill some time in my case, because I'm not very good at it. But having someone around to say, wow, this is when you come alive. Or to be more practical, for example, if you're imagine yourself at a volunteer opportunity at the wonderful Robinson Community Learning Center, and one of your friends says to you, you're really good with these kids. You really help them to understand math or English or whatever the subject matter is. Maybe you should think about going into teaching instead of mechanical engineering, for example, or something. That's a wonderful gift to have in people around us. So that's one element, I think, that makes for authentic career discernment is you got to have a community, a little village, as if you will, of people who are truthful, who are honest, and really will have the courage to call out maybe some of our own inability to see. I think the other piece is, as I said earlier, to be honest with oneself and to say, this is what really makes me happy. Yes, I'm good at engineering. Yes, I'm very good at finance. I'm very good at XYZ. But what really makes me happy is computer coding, perhaps. So chase the programming dream. Go for it. I think that's another piece, is to really be honest with oneself and able, frankly, to accept that. I think one final piece, and I think this is always the hardest, is authentic discernment, I think, takes a great deal of courage. At the end of the day, whatever the choice is, it's a choice. And all choices have an element of loss. If I do this, I can't do that. Or if I do this, I can't do as much of that. And so there's often an inability to sort of, for lack of a better phrase, to pull the trigger and make the choice because of that loss that might ensue. And so I think a great deal of courage is required for a kind of authentic discernment. Just to circle back, I think it's having a group of people around you to support you, to encourage you, to call you out, to challenge you. I think having a great deal of honesty with oneself around what truly makes one happy and where one's gifts actually lie. And I think the courage to embrace all of that and move forward confidently.
I think that third piece resonates a lot with our listeners as you think about their students. And it's very hard to make that decision. I love to paint, but I just paid tuition at Notre Dame and painting isn't a job. And I think that's a difficult thing for people to wrestle with internally. And I've seen it. What advice then would you give to somebody, you know, a student who's about to graduate and maybe feels that dissonance?
Even before graduation, I think it becomes, you know, as you're discerning a major, for example, for those of you who are first year students, and really having to make that choice of going into one college or another. Well, for one thing, you can change your, I've seen juniors change their major. It's not easy, but it can be done. For everything I've learned in life that's important, I've learned from The Godfather. And one of the wonderful phrases in The Godfather is, if history has taught us anything, is that nothing is impossible. Difficult, but not impossible. And so even things like choosing a major and so forth, I look at your major as being a wonderful foundation. Earlier, when we were visiting, I shared my experience in the boardroom, et cetera, and having to go back and learn basic finance terms, et cetera. I was able to do that because I had a sort of foundational experience of learning. And I think if you look at your undergraduate career as teaching you how to learn, if you've learned how to learn, the rest of your career will fall into place. I try to remind people that our perhaps most well-known finance major is the author of The Notebook, Nicholas Sparks. A wonderful member of our track and cross-country team during his time, a finance major, graduate of Mendoza College of Business, and wrote The Notebook. He wasn't in creative writing as a major. He wasn't an English major. And yet today he's very, very well known as a writer. but he learned how to learn. He followed passion. And I think that's a wonderful example of how your major is not necessarily restrictive of your future. And so to go back to your question for those seniors who are wrestling right now, this is a lifelong tension. You know, do I take that job at whatever firm? Or, as is the case for 10% of our senior class every year or more, do I do a year of service? Do I go out into the world and see what's happening outside our beloved campus bubble and say, what does the world need of me? I've got this degree. I know how to learn. What does the world need? Do I have what's needed in my toolbox to get a start? Because don't forget, it's a lifelong journey. People go back to school all the time. That's a real gift, as it were, to be able to have that privilege of sitting back and saying, what can I do? Because that itself, I think, is the act of a good life, is when you can sit back and say, look at all I have, all I've been given, and ask, what does the world need from me? And that will change. It'll change from day to day sometimes. We hope not too often during day to day, but it can change certainly year to year and in seasons of life. You know, today people don't have the single job for the rest of their lives. And in fact, this generation, it said, goes from job to job with some frequency. That's a wonderful opportunity, but it also should give comfort to those who are sort of wrestling with, well, if I take this job, am I going to be stuck in that firm forever? The answer is no, certainly not. And in fact, perhaps you'll be more valuable to another company because you have this wonderful experience. And as I look back even on my own career path, having that sort of variety and wealth of experience has brought me to a very different place where now the next place I go, which who knows, at this point I may just pack up and move to Cedar Grove Cemetery from here. but, you know, perhaps if I did go somewhere else, the experiences that I've had, the people I've met through that networking, as it were, will be a wealth that another firm would value very highly.
That's a great point, and I think it's a tremendous actual segue into Olivia and I's favorite part of the interview.
Yes.
Called Final Question, which actually entails multiple questions that the guest has no idea is coming. And I think I'll start with the fact that in the spirit of learning and growing and discerning, what's been the greatest lesson you've learned from failure?
These are the hard ones.
I'm at a loss as to where to start. And I think that's probably a sign that I failed quite a lot in my life, which I,
Which one do I pick?
Which one do I pick? But also just, I think, to be grateful for the failures. When I came to Notre Dame, my role was to help the university to reimagine foundation relations, that is, working with philanthropic foundations to support the university. And I would often tell the new people on our team how wonderful it was when someone at a foundation would take Notre Dame's proposal and say, no, thank you. Because it gave us an opportunity to go back and ask questions as to what was it was lacking. Versus when you get a yes, you'll get the check in the mail and a gift agreement, and it's a wonderful thing, yes, but you've really not learned much from that encounter. Whereas with a failure, when you don't achieve your desired outcome, you're left, hopefully, you're asking questions and say, what went wrong? Was it something I did? Was it something that I was ill-equipped to achieve? Was there perhaps a learning moment that I missed? Or was it perhaps something I didn't understand about the other side of the equation? So failure can actually give quite a lot of visibility. And I think that is an important moment to stop and sort of take inventory, to take stock before moving on too quickly to what's next.
Okay, my next question in the final question segment is having to do with the opposite of kind of what you've already talked about. You've already given so much great advice that students should follow, but what would you say is a piece of advice that students commonly get that you don't think is worth following?
Well, that is a very hard question. I'll give you a couple of themes that I think often would fall into this category of don't listen to that. One of them would be your major is decisive for your career. It is not. I'm a walking example of that, a very successful business executive who studied philosophy and theology. You can do anything. study what you love, learn how to learn, the rest will fall into place. Another piece of advice that falls into the don't listen to that category, be friends with everybody. That is the worst thing you could do for yourself mentally, I think, but also for the people you encounter in your life. As I said earlier, everyone's worth meeting. Some people are worth hanging out with. Find those people who not only enrich you, but that you have something to enrich them as well. Because I think in that reciprocity, friendship becomes a really powerful experience. One other piece is that we often look at the career journey as a ladder. Climb, 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 climb. What's next? How am I going to get there? How do I get to that next level? What's the highest title I can achieve? What's the biggest salary I can make? But with that kind of a mentality, you're never, ever going to be happy. You're always going to be climbing. And so I think one of the things that I always encourage is don't be afraid of a lateral move. And in my case, don't be afraid of stepping back. People often, when I say this, they're shocked because I'm not yet 50, barely 40. And I say, I'm on the retirement plan. I'm on the way out. I feel I've achieved that ladder, as it were, and now I'm doing what really makes me happy. And that's working with students, and that's, you know, being in the classroom and working with alumni, parents, and friends who are interested in supporting Notre Dame philanthropically. And all of that, to me at this point, is no longer a career. It's an act of love, really. It's an act of service. To me, that's the height of a career discernment, when it becomes an act of love and service.
And you've been an awesome ambassador to that here on campus. And that's why I love talking to you, my man, is that I feel like I get a lot out of it every time, too. It's funny, we've put this podcast together for Notre Dame students, and I'm sitting here kind of having my own self-reflection. So I appreciate it. You're an enlightened cat, and you know I love you. You are on campus, and you are a resource that students should reach out to and connect with. Your knowledge of campus is unmatched. If anybody's coming to visit Notre Dame and wants a campus tour, this
they better
man,
have 3 hours.
Yeah, this man knows all the ins and outs. So I'm curious, what hidden gem or resource on campus do Notre Dame students maybe not know about or not take advantage of enough, in your opinion, that they should really utilize?
That's an easy one. Office hours. I think getting in touch with faculty, no matter what your discipline, no matter what field you're in, or even if it's not your field, faculty are here for you. If there's one thing we learned in the last years over the pandemic here, it's hard to believe it's been over a year now. It's very odd to be at a university without students. The period between March and August of 2020 was perhaps one of the most reflective and, I'll be honest, disturbing periods of my own life. To walk through campus and see a family of deer having taken over the South Quad because no one is there to play spike ball or frisbee or just study on the quad was just disturbing in so many ways. And I think all of the faculty would agree, we're here for you. That's why we're here. If you're not here, what's the point? So reach out to them, take advantage. You know, office hours can be very lonely for faculty when no students show up. So help us not be lonely. Reach out, ask questions. Even outside your discipline, I think faculty would appreciate that more than you know, but I think also you'll benefit so much more than you realize from that kind of quote-unquote networking.
Thank you. That is great. We have one final question, and that is going to be, what did we not ask you that you wish we would have? Like, what would you have liked to talk about that we haven't?
Well, we've covered so much ground, it's difficult to say. But I think I would probably want to offer that as difficult as you think the decision is to make about a career or any other major move in your life, I'll quote a very dear friend of mine who said, make the decision for you. Don't think about the consequences, as it were. Don't, and not necessarily in a bad way, consequences. I mean, don't think about what that would do for your sort of, you know, your salary history or your LinkedIn profile or what your siblings might say or your mom and dad or whatever. Do it for you. Because this is your life. It's your gift to give the world. It's, frankly, it's your gift to yourself, because you'll spend more time in this work, whatever it might be, than you will on anything else in your life. And if it does nothing but suck energy out of you, why are you doing it? So whatever the decision is ahead of you, do it for yourself.
That's really good advice. And I think a lot of times people do need to hear that, because there are so many external forces that we're taking into account. And so just boiling it down to a simple comment or question like that, it just makes a lot of sense. So thank you for that. And thank you just in general for being with us here today. I think I speak for Jared and I and Gabby too. When we say that, we're really thankful that you're able to take some time to speak with us today. One final point that we'd like you to mention is just how students can connect with you and reach out to you. You're a great resource to have on campus, and I'm sure that after hearing some of your wisdom today, people would love to hear even more.
Well, sure. Listen, I'm always available and always have time for a coffee or introduction meeting. And certainly more than anything, I've been around long enough that, as people say, I somehow know lots and lots of people both on and off campus, and happy to always leverage that network to connect students with alumni, parents, and friends who, in a way that's somewhat different, I think, from other institutions, are so willing to help our students and willing to connect with them and speak with them. I've never reached out to an alum, parent, or friend and said, hey, we've got a student interested in this. Would you mind spending half an hour with them? No one's ever said no. And in fact, they're always so grateful for the experience. And I think, as I said about the faculty and office hours, that it's the same mentality. We're here for you. And so, yes, absolutely happy to reach out, or happy to connect, rather. Please reach out. I'm the real ND Rudy, as I often joke. I'm easy to find in the directory and via email. Absolutely encourage folks to reach out.
Thank you very much, my man, for being here today. And I guess we'll see you around campus.
See you around.